Hi everyone, welcome to the Movie Good or Movie Bad podcast. We just finished watching the Oscars and I'm a little tipsy from drinking margaritas, but today James is sharing thoughts on the 2024 Oscars ceremony. Here is your host, James Willey.
Haley, thank you for the intro and welcome everyone to the Movie Good or Movie Bad podcast. My name is James and this is the Oscar recap episode. I really thank you all for tuning in, especially knowing that everyone else who has a movie podcast is doing the same thing and some of them have already published their episodes as of now. This is not me judging anybody. This is just, you know, I think it's really funny that, you know, if you live on the West Coast, you have a little bit more time because the Oscars are done with like 7:30. You could record a podcast after that if you wanted to. And the number of people who I know who record podcasts, who made TikToks immediately after the Oscars is just mind-blowing to me. I have a little bit of the gift of getting to reflect on this a little bit more the day after. It's roughly 2 p.m. Monday after the Oscars, March 11th. Still very fresh, less than 24 hours later. Lots of thoughts, lots of things that people aren't talking about. So, you know, let's get into it for the sake of posterity. So let's talk about the night. Predictions-wise, I got 20 out of 23 right. That very much impressed a lot of the people who were at our Oscars party last night. But for me, you know, it was just another day, right? It was very predictable. A lot of people are saying online it was very predictable. I want to talk about that aspect because I think people are very shocked. Why are the Oscars so predictable all of a sudden? I think a lot of things have changed in the game. Lots of people want to be Oscars pundits. Lots of people want to guess these things. Lots of people want to do a quick party favor and show off to their friends and be like, hey, I can guess all the Oscars films. You know, whether they're looking at Variety articles, whether they're looking at pundits that they really enjoy who are very correct on Twitter or wherever, they can do it, right? And lots of people are very, very good at their predictions. Now, I think there's lots more Oscar pundits this year than I've ever seen before, whether they're unprofessional, professional, people who are new to the game, who are very, very bad at their predictions. Very, very bad. I'm not talking about anyone I know. I'm just saying that there are people who are very bad out there that you shouldn't listen to. But if you look at all the regional awards, if you look at, you know, the SAGs, the BAFTAs, the Golden Globes, any of these precursor awards, you can kind of guess mathematically what's going to happen at the Oscars. It's not absolute. I was wrong about three things, but it can give you some indicators of, you know, what might happen. For instance, that's why I knew that Hayao Miyazaki and The Boy and the Heron was going to get Best Animated Feature Film. If you look in the past, any film that's ever won the Golden Globe and the BAFTA has previously won the Oscar, specifically animated feature film. I did that. I predicted it. Many people predicted Across the Spider-Verse. I was right because I knew that little piece of factoid knowledge, even though many people thought that Spider-Verse was a lock. I'll talk about the three things that I got wrong when I go through my breakdown, because I think there's a common trend in where I predicted wrong. So let's talk about the opener of the night, the Jimmy Kimmel monologue. Jimmy Kimmel is awful. He's not funny. He's not great. I don't like him. He's not good. And I want to be objective. He was much worse this year than any other year that he's hosted the Oscars. I think everything about his performance or his monologue or his jokes or everything, it was all awful in a very special and unique way. I think last year, he was very 50-50. I think there's some moments where I thought, oh, wow, that was way funnier than I thought it would be. And other moments I was like, Jesus Christ. This year, I feel like 95% of the time I went, Jesus Christ. And the other 5% of the time he was being overshown by John Mulaney or one of the people who's presenting the awards or just anybody else. The thing that I don't like about Jimmy, on top of I just personally don't think he's funny, which is, you know, very subjective, I think Jimmy doesn't really like the movies. Every year there's a host, and this happened with the Golden Globes and Joe Coy. What is the point of making fun for how long a movie is? Well, one, everyone makes that joke every year. Two, the movies were clearly long and clearly people saw them, otherwise they wouldn't be nominated. And, you know, the Best Picture winner was a 3-hour movie about essentially people talking to each other. Not about people talking to each other, but that's essentially the structure and the function of the movie. I don't know, it's low-hanging fruit. It's not funny enough. It's not funny enough, especially compared to the John Mulaney gag where he just explains how ridiculous the plot of Field of Dreams is without making fun of the movie. That's phenomenal. That's outstanding. That's the kind of host that we should be having for these awards. There was lots of jokes from Jimmy Kimmel that I was kind of groaning at. There's other people speaking, you know, at the party over him because we frankly didn't care. But, you know, to make fun of Robert Downey Jr. and his struggles with addiction and how that's really affected his time in Hollywood, I'm sure Robert Downey Jr. has moved past a lot of that. He's heard a lot of these jokes before. I think he gets it. He's in the public eye. But it was still, it was really gross. Just a really distasteful way to start off the night. And that's all that Twitter said about it. I wrote nothing was landing and agreed, nothing was landing. The rest of the ceremony, wins included, even if I'm unhappy about some of the wins, I think overall was outstanding. Better than previous years with some nuances, and I'll get into that. I knew this going in, but many people seemed to be very shocked. They had five previous winners announce the nominees all throughout the night. At least for supporting actress. This is the caveat to this. For supporting actress, every single one of the previous nominees knew one of their people that they were speaking about. Like, they were friends, there was a personal touch. They gave them extended amount of time to introduce each of the nominees. It is one of the most lovely tributes to acting I've ever seen. It was one of the most tasteful things that could have ever happened. I loved it. It was amazing. I was literally sitting with people who hadn't seen all the films and like, man, I really want everyone to win now. And yeah, it really did feel that way. It made it everyone feel so deserved, and it spoke to their accomplishments and who they were as people. And I just think that was really lovely, because even if you didn't win, you got that really lovely moment with someone that you knew from your past. And that was just amazing. It was really amazing to see. I loved it the most for supporting actress. I think it was handled very well for the other categories, you know, the other acting categories, excuse me. I think it was a little more apparent when there was less of a personal touch, like sometimes someone just saying something to somebody else and just being like, I was really blown away by your performance. This was outstanding. This was this. Like, I think an example was when Brendan Fraser said something about Jeffrey Wright. It was very lovely, it was very meaningful, and it was very clear that they were not friends in the same way that some of the other people for supporting actress were. And that's okay. That's completely okay. But, you know, it's very noticeable. Overall, you know, very happy with supporting actress, of course. That was not a shock. Divine Joy Randolph has literally won every single precursor that's ever come up for her. We knew she was going to win. That's not a huge shock. And I think that's okay in that kind of predictableness. When the right person wins, to me, that's not an issue. I wanted Past Lives to win more things. I'm still happy with everyone else that won, and I think that's what made it a much more enjoyable ceremony for me. And, you know, kind of speaking of that, Divine's speech was lovely. And I think overall, most of the speeches were of equal caliber. With the exception of the next award, animated short film went to The War Is Over, which is the John Lennon Yoko Ono movie. And I've heard this movie is just such a wild piece of shit. And of course we knew it was going to win. This is one of the Academy in these short film circuits is so easy to predict because they typically make really weird choices. I just want to name this. In a world where the occupation of Palestine is happening, not that I'm expecting anything pro-Palestinian to happen at the Oscars, and we'll get into that too. The War Is Over speech didn't mention anything about war. It was very little about the content. It was just about having the honor to make this film and having the ability to, you know, have Yoko Ono bless it, because, you know, obviously Yoko Ono and John Lennon's son was there. It felt very detached. It felt very inhuman. They honestly could have done a lot better. They could have done a lot better in a lot of different ways, and that's okay. That's okay. I bet on The Boy and the Heron, and you all defined me for the Oscars. I just put that down. I explained, obviously, you could have predicted that The Boy and the Heron was going to win due to the BAFTA and Golden Globe combination, and how I think the past 10 years, any film that's won those two combinations has, in fact, won. For me, you know, The Boy and the Heron was lined up to win the second one, the Golden Globe. So the Golden Globe has been doing animated feature films, so I think shorter than the Oscars, which started in 2001. In the past, there's been three nominees that were anime films. This year, one of them was Suzume, one was The Boy and the Heron, last year was Inuo, and this won the Golden Globe. Now, let me say, I didn't make an episode when the Golden Globes happened. Those were overall a better set of wins. Not than the Oscars, just better set of wins in Golden Globe history. The Boy and the Heron, once that happened, I was like, oh, this thing is winning. It's winning. And I think I was just so shocked at all the ways that people were so convinced that Spider-Verse was going to win. And for me, that's for a number of reasons. One, it won the Producers Guild Award, it won the Annie's Award, which is the Animated Oscars. Anatomy of a Fall and the PIMP win was incredible. If you don't know, Anatomy of a Fall, the legal procedural film, the song PIMP by 50 Cent, specifically the instrumental version, is a big part of the movie. I was with people who had no idea. It was a big shock, and just like, why is the 50 Cent song playing? It was incredible. It was an amazing moment. It was the best thing they could have done. I thought Justine Triet's speech was very lovely. I didn't realize that her and her husband wrote the film together in lockdown. I think that's very cool. Quite a number of playwrights that are not playwrights, screenwriters that are couples. I was thinking about Celine Song and her husband, who didn't work together in past lives, but he wrote Challengers. Their outlooks on marriage are so different between the two couples. But, you know, Justine Triet's speech was very lovely. It was good to see her there. I think I was shocked. There was something I've noticed, and this is especially the case a couple of years ago when Parasite won Best Picture. You know, most of the time, people who don't speak English don't have the opportunity to speak at the Oscars, other than Best International Film. But because of everything that was happening with Parasite, I guess Neon or Bong Joon-ho hired a translator in order to help him on stage. And really, that made things, I think, move a lot more fluidly and made him a lot more comfortable on stage. This is not a critique of Justine Triet's English. This is not a critique of the Godzilla Minus One folks and their ability to speak English. But I think the Academy really needs to provide people with translators, regardless if they win or not. You're going to take that loss, and this is going to make sure that these people feel comfortable and have the ability to give the speeches that they want to, because they should have the opportunity to do that. It was very notable this year. I think that's because it speaks to the number of non-English speakers that did win. I mean, maybe it's just those two that stick out to me, but very notable, I think, compared to past years. And, you know, I think they deserve the support, especially for two fantastic films. Wish Godzilla Minus One was nominated for Best Picture, but that's just me. Speaking of that win, that was phenomenal. We knew that was going to happen going in. That was not a shock, but I was very, very, very happy by the Godzilla Minus One Visual Effects Award. So deserved. $12 million budget film. Lots of conversations about the exploitation of Japanese workers and making that film and not about, like, other, like, actual American folks who are also being exploited. Just comes across to me as xenophobic or racist, like, focusing on that specific kind of harassment or those working conditions there and not over here, because the same stuff's happening over here. Let's talk about the Cord Jefferson win. So Cord Jefferson was the writer and director for American Fiction. He recently won an award for American Fiction that made people think, oh, he for sure is going to win the Oscar. That's how I predicted that. And I really loved his speech for a number of reasons. One, it was very earnest. It was very honest. I love that he brought attention to the fact that, you know, he made a smaller film. Granted, you know, he made it through MGM, through Amazon, like a massive company, right? These companies have the ability to fund all these smaller films, right? We're in a point in the industry where they're focusing so much on the $200 million film, the $150 million film, and those films are not making money. The theaters are not the same. As much as I love to go to the theater and experience that, they're very different than they used to be pre-COVID, and even from a box office perspective. But the fact that he was willing to go on out of his way and say, you know, hey, you can fund 50 $4 million films or 20 $10 million films or et cetera using the amount of money that you did for one of these gigantic films, and kind of bring up what it's like to be, you know, the importance of making both of these kinds of movies and how the Oscars celebrate both of these movies, especially this year, you know, with Barbie and Oppenheimer being there. And we have room for all these. And it was one of the biggest cheers that we got the entire night. It was really fabulous, really outstanding. It was a great use of his time and his space. And I'm appreciative of every word that he said, because many studio executives needed to hear that. So let's talk about where everything went wrong for me, or where my predictions went wrong. I predicted that Poor Things was going to walk away with one win for the night. That was production design, which it did in fact win. I was right about that. But then I got crafty, because I looked at other people rather than going with my gut, and bet on Barbie for costuming, which to be fair has really magnificent costuming, and Maestro, which has for hair and makeup. And I gotta say, we can talk about Bradley Cooper's nose and the fake nose in the movie. That is an issue, I agree, and the Academy loves that shit. Let's be honest, that's just being real. So I was shocked when Poor Things won, and it deserved. Both are deserved, but shocked in the most pleasant way possible. And that made me kind of wonder, will an upset happen? Will I be shocked at the outcome of the night? And no. Those are the biggest shocks of the night, except maybe Best Actress. Forgive me for my pronunciation, but Wazazi, which is a song from my people, from Killers of the Flower Moon, that performance was one of the most engaging things of the night. It was one of the most powerful performances. It was equally as strong as the performance that was in the movie. It was just really amazing. It was really outstanding, and I was really glad that this film got a nomination for that. I did not expect it to win, and to be fair, I thought it was going to win something throughout the night. To have them do the performance there was a really powerful moment, and I'm glad that it happened. Overall, let's jump in the performances, kind of jumping out of order. There were two really amazing performances and three fucking mediocre ones. Let's be real. This was a comment that someone else made at the party, but it seemed like some of the people had COVID or their voices were hoarse or they lost something or they're all sick. I did not like the Becky G performance for Flaming Hot. I thought that her voice didn't sound great. It was also a really short song. It was a really bizarre nomination, honestly, to be fair. It felt like a lot of people nominate because of Diane Warren, but, you know, that happened. The John Batiste song, I thought, was good. It was engaging. It was never going to win over the Barbie song, let's be real. But I think the performance overall was good. It was a much more subdued, laid-back piano performance. And again, very similar to What Was I Made For. I love Billie Eilish, right? She's amazing. She's incredible. Phenomenal vocalist. That's not a question here. Her live performance at the Oscars was questionable to me. I'll say that. She sounded very sick. Someone pointed out that the performance was in another key, which I noticed too. And it wasn't a bad performance, but it felt very under par from her. And that was a little disappointing, especially considering, you know, how magnificent that song is. I'm sure it was very impactful for several people, but for me, I wanted a little bit more out of the performance. Now, the performance that really wowed me, the one that really floored me, didn't bet on it to win Best Original Song, but I wish it did. I'm just Ken. Wow. The number of tweets I saw from people saying the fact that Ryan Gosling outshowed so many pop girlies online with his little dance and his singing is incredible. He's an amazing vocalist, amazing dancer. He's always been super talented. He's been a child star, you know. That's not really a question here. But he really puts his all into goddamn everything, and that needs to be respected way more. He is 100% committing to the bit. To have his performance open with him being in the audience, and to have him be seated in front of Billie Eilish, and to have him be behind Margot Robbie as they're just dying laughing, I don't know, it was such a fun, goofy moment, and it's nice to have those kinds of moments at these shows. Lots of the best original songs I feel like we've gotten in recent years have been very serious, have been very dramatic. It's fun to have a fun little goofy rock ballad song that feels like a big throwback number to, you know, early Hollywood and these massive musicals. It was just really fun. It was a really fun song. It was a really fun song, really fun performance. Love the fact that the previous Kens got to come back there. Love the choreography. There was so much energy. It was so dynamic. Like, he was going back and forth in the audience and coming back up and, like, really playing with the dimensions and the size of the space in a way that was so creative, a way that we don't really see in these Oscars performances, especially because that might be the only time the song has ever performed. And he just killed it. I'm Just Ken was phenomenal. I feel like I saw people won over who were not expecting to really enjoy the song, or people who did not get the appeal of the song, and then they're like, oh my god, now I get it. And I'm concerned that they didn't get it watching the movie, but my god, it was an amazing performance. Now let's talk about another series of wins that deserves a lot of attention, and that is the Zone of Interest 2 wins. Now, one was for Best International Feature Film, one was for Sound. I predicted both. I believe it was after the BAFTA upset I predicted Sound. Two really monumental wins for the night. One, the Jonathan Glazer speech was great. It was great. I think some people are critiquing the fact that he didn't do more, they didn't say more, and you have to also understand your audience and what you're capable of doing in that setting without getting blacklisted. I think he probably said as much as he could without getting critiqued. And as of this morning, his speech, his very pro-Gaza speech, very pro-Palestinian speech, is not available on YouTube as of the Academy's YouTube page. And the same thing with the Zone of Interest Best Sound Award, and that didn't mention Israel or Gaza or Palestine at all, which is ultimately disappointing, the fact that that award is not up online at all. But I think Jonathan Glazer did a few things that were really outstanding that need to be commended. One, he drew attention to the fact that it was an occupation. Two, he threw his Jewishness out there and kind of said, you know, we've seen what the Holocaust is, we're not going to let another one happen, and people are letting it happen. And three, he really laid into the fact that Israel instigated all of this. And I think those are some really bold things that if you dive into it, it really is impactful. And clearly the way that people are reacting, whether it's the Academy not uploading the speeches onto YouTube, or the fact that there's so many journalists who are so frustrated with what he said and are misconstruing it or misquoting it, says that what he did worked. And I think that's what really matters for right now. We can critique it, we can workshop it later, and I think he did more than anyone else on that stage, to be honest, right? I think Core Jefferson's speech was another speech I would name as important. Very important speech, don't want to get rid of that. But what Jonathan Glazer did to speak out about Palestinians was so important. I think there's such a marked difference between what you're able to do at an American award show versus other award shows, and just like a very good example of that is what happened with James Wilson, who's a producer of The Zone of Interest, and what he was able to say at the BAFTAs versus what, you know, Jonathan Glazer was able to say at the Oscars. There's such a big difference, and it's important to really highlight that and note that, because I feel like there's lots of people who do want to speak out, and if they do, they'll get blacklisted. I mean, there's plenty of celebrities who've talked about it. There's plenty of celebrities now who are getting blacklisted. Susan Sarandon, Melissa Barrera, people with names, right? These are name stars. Melissa Barrera is not as big as Susan Sarandon, but they will blacklist you, and I think that's really operating a lot of people's ability to advocate for themselves or for Palestinian people. And I feel like that's such a marked difference to, you know, there was a post that came out from the Washington Post, or an article that came out from the Washington Post very early before the Oscars, where they're talking about these are the do's and the don'ts for the Oscars, and they said you can only talk about politics if it's the documentary. You can't talk about politics anywhere else. And clearly that was to allow space for 20 Days in Mariupol to be able to speak about Ukraine. The fact that Ukraine as a topic has been able to take up as much space that it has at an American award show, and Palestine hasn't been able to, speaks on the differences of the ways that brown people are treated, and the way that Muslims are treated, and the way that the Middle East is treated versus Europe, right? No one would give a shit about Ukraine if it was in the middle of South Asia, right? That's just facts. And to me, those differences are more and more frustrating as I think about them, to be perfectly honest. So let's talk about Wes Anderson's first Oscars win, which was a very big shock to some people to know that he has never won an Oscar before. His films have won Oscars, but he has never personally won one. He won for Best Live Action Short for Henry Sugar. Very expected, not shocked. It's a great short. I don't think it's as strong as Asteroid City, a film that should have gotten nominations this past year. Overall, not too shocking that he won. I was shocked that he wasn't present. I joked that he was probably filming a movie at the time, and that's why he wasn't there. Turns out that it's been confirmed. He's filming in Germany as of today, as of the time of recording. And I'm guessing it's the Michael Cera movie, unless he's doing something in between. I think he's doing a Michael Cera movie about childhood or parenthood. Glad at his win. Spoke volumes of the fact that he's been snubbed so many times and was not there. He didn't try to work his way around it and fit into his schedule. But, you know, he put out a speech this morning. It was very lovely. And same thing about Hayao Miyazaki. Speaking of the Zone of Interest, when Hayao Miyazaki won Best Animated Feature Film for Spirited Away, he actually didn't go to the award ceremony to protest the Iraq War and the U.S.'s involvement. And I am not shocked a man as anti-war as him is probably protesting the U.S., for very similar reasons about what's happening in Palestine. I think his absence not being there spoke volumes in ways that I think words couldn't, and I think it says a lot, even if people are very unaware of it right now. I just put a note here that John Mulaney is one of the funniest people ever to present the Oscars. If you didn't know, he did the Governor's Awards, which is where they present a lot of the Lifetime Achievement Awards for the Oscars. They presented four. One was for Mel Brooks, one was for Angela Bassett. He just killed it. John Mulaney was so funny consistently all throughout, and everyone had a really great time. It's very clear as you look at people, they're genuinely laughing. He got way more laughs than that 5 minute period that Jimmy Kimmel did throughout the entire Oscars. It was kind of wild to see, but I was glad to see it, and I really do hope that John Mulaney is hosting the Oscars just very shortly in the future. I hope it happens next year or the following year after that. The Zone of Interest sound win, which again was a snub or a shock for many people, one I predicted, one of the best wins in years. Sound is a category that's so wildly misunderstood. Some people think about being as loud as a movie is or quiet as it is, or it's much more than that. It's all the sound design. It's everything that goes into making a movie. I really wish sound was still two categories. And I also think the best movie won for that category, for sure. Oppenheimer would have been a fantastic win for sure. I'm not upset about that at all if it won. But Zone of Interest is so defined by its sound and what it is that it makes it that much more of a profound win for it to have won sound. Now, I've gone back and forth on this, and I've gone to the point where I kind of hate it again now, but the In Memoriam segment felt tasteful to me, but every year they get so distracted by the dancers that they don't really focus on, like, who's actually passed away and who are remembering. But my God, I do think the dancing was a little bit distracting at points, especially when it was covering up the screen. And why was the scene kept transitioning so many different times? They kept lifting up and folding up different screens, and I thought that was really distracting. I was kind of shocked that they went ahead and did that anyway. But overall, the In Memoriam segment was fine. I really disliked the circle that was at the end, where they just kind of displayed like 50 names and called it a day. Like Lance Reddick's name was on there, Suzanne Summers, a couple of other people, some really big names. I think regardless of how big the names are, you know, just make space for everybody, or just, you know, say for a fact, hey, these other names will be all online or whatever, or do something, right? Because it's a lot different in the way that they're celebrated versus other people. It's easily the part that's critiqued the most out of the In Memoriam. So many people pass away. It's hard to recognize them all. I get that. You can't have every single name. But to skip through the names that you did, it just feels, I don't know. Let's talk about the Cillian Murphy win, because I think it was absolutely beautiful. I think he was so gracious, and I think he had so many courteous words to say for himself, his collaborators, other people in the industry. He's just one of the most gracious men to ever do it. I feel like that's across the board. And so much of this was conveyed by him, but also the other technical awards that Oppenheimer won. I think so much can be said about Christopher Nolan, and it was just all so beautiful, right? Because I think it all speaks to him as a collaborator, as a team leader, and how he's able to get them to all to craft this film. A lot of them worked also on Tenet, which is really outstanding to me, and all culminated in a really beautiful way when Christopher Nolan accepted his award. The fact that he framed filmmaking as a profession that's only existed for about 100 years, we're approaching the 100th anniversary, and Christopher Nolan was thankful to be recognized as being a big part of that contribution, is just mind-blowing. It's one of the most profound things I've ever heard. Because no one thinks about the first 100 years of painting or theater or when those things happened and how those art forms developed. And we are still very early in film, and film will continue to progress and change. And that is just wild to me as an art form. I need to talk about the biggest unfortunate moment of the night, which is when Lily Gladstone lost Best Actress and Emma Stone won. The look of horror on Emma Stone's face was unlike anything I've ever seen at an award show. It was really wild. I think that win is a bit funny, considering that The Curse came out, the comedy show on Paramount Plus, where Emma Stone plays a white woman who's dealing with white guilt, who very much feels bad for the indigenous folks that she's clearly taking advantage of. And not saying that Emma Stone is taking advantage of Lily Gladstone, they are friends, but my god, what a historic win that, like, just didn't happen because of Emma Stone's win. And not to say that she isn't deserving. That's not the conversation we're having here. Emma Stone is absolutely deserving. But for Lily Gladstone to not win, and to question whether or not she's going to have the opportunity to win again, or another indigenous actress will again, speaks volumes to issues with the academy, to the industry, to the ways that people of color are respected and commodified and kind of objectified in the film industry and not recognized for any of that. And I think that's really all I can say about it. I feel horribly sad for Lily. Many people thought it was going to be between the two of them. I'm sure she had some kind of suspicion in her mind that Emma was going to win. They are friends now, so I'm sure it's not going to be that big of an issue, but I really wish that Lily won, and that'll be an Oscar loss that will stick with me for a very long time. I hope she has the opportunity to be on that stage again. She has a couple of films in the upcoming future that I hope, you know, get her in that Oscar stage, but we'll see. We'll see for sure. So overall, I thought it was a very predictable night. I think it was a great show. I think all the films that deserved to win won. Although I'm very disappointed with the Lily Gladstone win and think that she deserved to win and think that she gave the stronger performance and that her performance would have been important to win, I do think Emma Stone is worthy of winning. But that is a completely different conversation and completely different situation than not just for someone who hasn't won an Academy Award before, but a woman of color who, you know, we're questioning whether or not she's going to be recognized or not. Everything was worthy. It was overall a great show. It was a great show. I do wonder if these shows are going to get more and more predictable as time goes on. And I really appreciate everyone for buckling in and sitting down as I talked about some of my feelings about not a very tumultuous Oscar season, a very straightforward one. One that feels even more straightforward than everything everyone wants is now that I think about it, but nonetheless a great one. One that I'm very glad ended the way that it did. I thank you all for your patience. I'm recording this day after the Oscar, so you all can... you can handle it. But anyways, hopefully this episode's out tonight. We'll see. I do hope that you all have a good one. I hope that you tune in for the next episode, because now that will be the listener's pick episode. I'm very excited for you all to tune in. And then we have a very special episode after that. And Haley, take us away.
This has been the Movie Good or Movie Bad podcast, and we hope you all enjoyed that one. For the next episode, James is going to do the second listener's pick episode of the podcast, where James will talk about Todd Haynes' Safe and George Miller's The Witches of Eastwick. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.